Near you.
You're listening to Minnesota Sports Rewind.
92-89, Timberwolves with the lead, and now this crowd is starting to believe that they'll win.
Now, the Bulls don't want any fouls here. They just like to play some real good defense.
Marbury drives baseline, bounces it to Hammonds, to Kevin Garnett on top from 20. Garnett.
Yes, sir. Beautifully done. Garnett with a 15.
Man, that's courtesy of Sports Channel, 1997 Sports Channel in Chicago. We are a half hour into this episode of Minnesota Sports Rewind, focusing on the 1997 win by the Minnesota Timberwolves over Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. At the time, it was the trademark win of the Timberwolves' rise up during that era. And of course, a year later, Stephon Marbury's ego decided that he was good with it all. But Tom Hanneman, first of all, Phil Mackey here, Judd Zolgad. Before we dive in, we'd love some stories. We know that you were on the court and you were part of that broadcast team, but how are you? And it's great to hear you on the show here today.
Phil and Judd, I'm fine. Thanks for giving me a call. Most Wolves fans, and I'm in that grouping as well, have spent most of their life trying to forget about games rather than remember. But this was one that that stands out, and for all good reasons. It took 9 seasons for the franchise to have a winning record in that year. 97-98 was the first time. And I know that there was some mocking going on at the time with the Bulls announced team afterwards, after the game, about, yeah, do you guys look like you were celebrating a championship? And indeed, I think that fans felt that way. It was the closest thing that we had come and to beat the mighty Michael Jordan, who went on to continue a string of championships with that Bulls team that year, was a pretty big deal. And about as exciting a moment until you got to the series win years later against Denver and then Sacramento. But it was an amazing night in so many ways. I know you've already delved into the Jordan component that night, and it made it interesting. But the fact was, very few people had any idea that any of that was going on at the time. So being a sideline reporter, I did the halftime show that we did every game, and there's no Jordan.
Yeah.
And you're looking for Michael Jordan, of course, because you're following his every move. And so I run backstage and to the locker room area and don't see anyone. And after a couple minutes, here's Michael walking out of Sheldon Burns, the team physician's door. And he'd been on the phone with Tim Hallam, the Bulls' longtime PR director. And Tim said he's not talking. And we were able to find out, but not immediately, what was going on. But yeah, Michael was 0-for-5, I think, in the third quarter of that game, and obviously it weighed heavily upon him because he didn't know whether it was true or not, and was able to find out later, but had kind of a rugged second half, and that played into it. But the game stood out for a lot of reasons, and most of them were very good.
So, Tom, the story was that Jordan or the Wolves got the call correct and passed on the information, because clearly this is in the pre-cell phone days, that Jordan's mom had been rushed to the hospital, and then I think they got subsequent calls. Did we ever get a lead in retrospect as to where the crank calls might have come from? Because that now is impossible, but going back and seeing the turmoil that the guy went through that night, that would be a lot to go through for anybody.
Yeah, it would, yeah. Dolores Jordan, his mom, and the call came into the Target Center switchboard, as I understand, and a security guard, and I don't know why this happened, approached Jordan as the team was leaving the floor at halftime, and of course, you know, he has no idea.
Right.
No one has any idea whether it's true or not, and his mind is immediately focused elsewhere, so... still, this is a guy that in his career averaged over 29 points a game against the Wolves. So to have an off night, he scored 33 points on an off night.
Yeah.
tells you something about the guy.
What are one or two of your favorite interactions or stories about young Kevin Garnett in that first 3 or 4 years rising up before Stephon Marbury decided he wanted to leave and before things got a little tumultuous? What are a couple of your favorite anecdotes you can share with us?
Well, there's a lot of them. They're all in the book, which hasn't been written yet.
By the way, if that book gets written, we will plug the you-know-what out of it, so let us know.
You know, the problem with writing books like that, kind of tell-alls, and most of them are very happy, is you end up bruising a lot of friendships and egos, so it's probably kept a few books from being written. But stories can be told, and you know, we love KG from the moment that he arrived, and you know, the first drills that he went through in St. Cloud at the time, where the team was starting their training camp, and you know, tossing his cookies into a garbage can nearby. You know, he was so excited and so amped, and thinking, you know, is this kid always like this? And of course we came to find out, yes. I got a chance because I was working sidelines and working as a reporter doing feature stories. We had to have a couple every game to get over to his apartment. His rookie year, he lived in a spot across from Ridgedale and had a couple dogs. And this is at a time that the apartment was filled with potato chips and a lot of junk food. A very young and raw Kevin Garnett, but I love the guy. I mean, it was hard not to love him. He was so open and so honest. And I feel badly in that the last few years of his time with the Timberwolves, before he came back, this was not quite the same guy, I think a lot of people felt, and I think some of the early years of Kevin Garnett were forgotten in the processes. A lot of us have looked back here with the Hall of Fame news this week. But Kevin was a character and was someone that was interested in interacting with people, and he did so many things that he asked me not to report on. And this was charitable stuff. For the first 8 years or so that he was with the Wolves, so many of the great stories really are tough to kind of clean up a little bit, and that sounds awful, but he just was a remarkable player, and everyone will say the same thing about Kevin Garnett that spent any time with him. There was no off button at any time. Whether it was practice, whether it was game, whether it was on the plane. You know, this is back in a time early on, guys, when the media, even those of us working for the team, were asked to the back of the plane to play cards with players, you know, and it was obviously they're out of our league economically, but it was a quarter a point type of thing. You know, those days changed dramatically in a very short time when, you know, when stories of Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley dropping $30,000 a hand on some of the poker games that they played. But I've got a ton of stories about KG, and so many of them are off the court. But all I can tell you is really a remarkable guy, and I'm excited for what lies ahead for him this fall. It's pretty cool thing.
So, Tom, to go back to that night and that game, too, and I hadn't watched that game since that night, but it was so intriguing to watch it, to see how hip and cool the Wolves were, how the fans truly had bought in, and that's a building, that's a young nucleus of players with veterans at the time who were stability factors. But tell me this. In watching that, the one thing that stood out to me crystal clear was the heartbeat of that team that not KG was, but that Steph was. And as you watched that game from the sideline that night, what was your feeling on Steph? How do you feel that if Steph hadn't forced it his way out, things would have gone for the Wolves? And among the sad things in this team's history, and there's lots of those things, where does that forced divorce back in 1999 now rank?
Well, I can't tell you how excited we were working for the team at the time to have found a way to capture Steph Marbury in the trade for Ray Allen. You look back on it now and you wonder, what if it hadn't been made? But that's another story. There's some unforgettable things with Steph Marbury. The morning that we learned, and we're driving over on the team bus for shoot around in Oakland, that Steph had forced his way into a trade. And we knew there'd been some conversation, but so Steph is on the bus and gets off and, he's good morning, good afternoon, and good night with a smile on his face to people. Sam Mitchell, when he heard about what had transpired, got so angry, right in front of Steph, took the rack of basketballs and flung them at the Oracle, flung them into the second deck, kicked them over. I mean, he was in many ways a team leader, certainly at that time and for many seasons. He felt that Steph was disrespecting the team and the players, and people backed down to Sam Mitchell. When Sam Mitchell got into the altercation a year earlier in the playoffs against Houston, against Kevin Willis, I think it was game two, and got a flagrant two, Charles Barkley told me afterwards, because I figured, Charles would defend Kevin Willis. He said, oh, no, you don't mess with Sam Mitchell. He said, that's one guy that I would not mess with. And it was kind of a turning point in the franchise that they were thought of as not the pushover, even though Houston swept that series. But Sam was livid and let Steph know, and Steph kind of quietly went away. Now, many years later, I think it was 2007, I'm doing a Wolves game with Jim Pete, and I look back about five rows, and there's Steph Marbury. He had retired, wasn't playing for the NBA. His career was done before he went over to China. And during a commercial break, I got up and walked over, and I knew him fairly well and was excited to see him and said, hey, would you sit down with us for a while? Fans would love to hear from you. And to my surprise, he said yes. And we had intermixed within that quarter, I thought, one of the most interesting conversations with a guy. All the questions that you asked me about, where would the team be? What would have happened had he decided to stay and not let his ego and all the people around him who told him in New York that you're better and you deserve more and you shouldn't be there. He owned up and said it was a horrible mistake on my part. I think about it a lot.
Wow.
He was contrite. I was shocked. And as sad as the chapter was, I was kind of pleased that A, he had grown up, and B, that he understood what had occurred and what he missed out on. But I think he was all in and understanding how special that Timberwolves team would have been had he stayed, which, you remember him talking about what he missed in New York. I miss opening the window at night on a winter night and hearing cabs honking endlessly. And I thought, well, I don't know how many of us will miss opening the window at night in a winter situation in New York or Minneapolis. But I do think he missed it, but he messed up. And I think he realized it even back then.
Yeah. So Tom Hanneman, it's my belief that you bring up the Ray Allen thing. I think this holds true if Stephon Marbury stays, and I think this holds true if they just keep Ray Allen in the 1996 draft. Because Stephon Marbury, just to loop this around to my point, Stephon Marbury played 10 more years in the NBA after the Timberwolves traded him and finished above 500 once legitimately. I'm not counting his last year in Boston where he just kind of came in as like the third guard off the bench. I think if he would have stayed with the Timberwolves, I think he was a winning player under Flip. I think he was a winning player with Kevin Garnett and ego and everything you just talked about. got the best of him and he regrets it. But there was a soft spot in the NBA in like 2004 through 2007 before LeBron James took over the league and after Michael Jordan was gone and after the Lakers dynasty had kind of dissolved. And yes, you still had the Spurs and you still had formidable teams. But if KG is emerging into his physical prime and Stephon Marbury had stayed the course, I honestly think we're talking about championships. Or if you had kept Ray Allen. I mean, I think just putting a legitimate sidekick around Kevin Garnett and building that thing and riding it for 7 or 8 years, I think we're talking a championship.
Yeah, NBA, I agree, Phil. NBA titles are all about windows. And I think that the Wolves were set up with either one of those players to have a window. You know, Marbury was just 21 years old when he left the Wolves. You know, and he goes on, he had seven straight seasons where he averaged over 20 points a game, and, you know, got what he thought he wanted in terms of the adulation, and he was the man on those teams for the most part. But what he missed out on and was something far more important. And sadly, in the process, Wolves fans missed out on that as well, and they're well aware of that. But fortunately, there were no other disappointments that would come in the future for the Timberwolves. So that helped that it was the only time.
By the way, there is one breaking right now that we'll get to it here in a second. There's some breaking KG news, but go ahead, Judd.
So, Tom, do you miss two things, the parquet floor and long twos? Because, baby, in watching that 97 game, I actually missed the parquet floor, but everybody and their brother shot long twos back then, and really, if you shot a three, I think you got looked at a little bit sideways.
You know, that season, I took a look at this this morning. That season, the Wolves, as a team, attempted 308 three-point shots. Mm. And Steph Curry, you know, has attempted 889 in a single season in his career, and so obviously things have changed dramatically, yeah, and the analytics didn't exist, but it's kind of commonsensical, isn't it, that that a long two is maybe the worst shot you can take, but things were evolving. I love that court. I did. I'm
really serious. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was terrific. And, yeah, I'm amazed, guys, how loyal Timberwolves fans have remained through the ups and downs, and it's sadly primarily downs. This is a franchise that I love. I worked for the team for 23 years. Love to see them rise up, and we're all hoping it would happen, but people love it. And maybe it is that so many of us grew up with this franchise, and so they're in a sweet spot that way. I know that inaugural year when there's over a million fans and the Metrodome wasn't exactly a conducive basketball arena, but people were just fired up and excited, and there were a lot of great memories. Sadly, it took, as mentioned, 9 years to get something like a win over Michael Jordan and the Bulls, but now you look at what the Wolves went on and did against Seattle after that win later in the spring, and I agree with the premise that this team, with Steph Marbury especially, you know, Charles Barkley gathered Marbury and Garnett at the end of the first ever playoff series the Wolves were involved in. The Rockets swept them, but the last game, Minnesota showed, I think that the potential was really there, and Barkley grabs these two guys and said, hey, you guys, you two stay together, you're going to get some rings. And I don't think he was doing it just to be kind or nice. I think Charles Barkley really believed that.
Yeah. That's Tom Hanneman, everybody. Longtime Timberwolves announcer, reporter, broadcaster, everything, and storyteller. And we appreciate you coming on this episode of Minnesota Sports Rewind. And we will not put you on the spot with this, but when we hang up here, go to The Athletic and read the story about Kevin Garnett, the Q&A with Kevin Garnett that just came out, where he unveils some of his feelings about Glenn Taylor and pour a stiff drink, even though it's only 11:51 in the morning right now. All right?
I can hardly wait.
All right. More Wolves drama, Annie.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, right, Tom.
See you, Tom. That is Tom Hanneman, just one of the best dudes in the industry.
One of the nicest guys you'll ever will come across.
So it's not often we get breaking news during an episode of Minnesota Sports Rewind that fits the episode of Minnesota Sports Rewind.
We just got it.
But we're just going to read this. This is from an Athletic Q&A with Kevin Garnett, and there's a bunch of stuff they dive into. But the question was in regards to the Celtics retiring Kevin Garnett's jersey before the Timberwolves will retire his jersey. And Kevin Garnett says, quote, "Glenn Taylor knows where I'm at. I'm not entertaining it. First of all, it's not genuine. Number two, he's getting pressure from a lot of fans and I guess the community there. Glenn and I had an understanding before Flip died. And when Flip died, that understanding went with Flip. For that, I won't forgive Glenn. I won't forgive him for that. I thought he was a straight up person, straight up businessman. And when Flip died, everything went with him. There's no reason to complain. Just continue to move on. My years in Minnesota and in that community, I cherish. At this point, I don't want any dealings with Glenn Taylor or Taylor Corporation or anything that has to do with him. I love my Timberwolves. I'll always love my guys. I'll always love the people who bleep with me there.
Yeah, that's...
Be careful.
There's a few bleeps in there.
I'll always have a special place for the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota in my heart. But I don't do business with snakes. I don't do business with snake MFers.
Mm-hmm, that's not nice either.
I try not to do business with openly snakes or people who are snake-like.
It's a lot of snakes.
Not a snake guy myself, so I get what he's saying.
Indiana Jones wasn't a snake
guy
either.
That's a lot of snake comments.
A lot of snakes.
Right,
yeah. So.
Yeah, so it's not going to take place for quite some time.
We'll do a deep dive into that on Mackie and Judd with Rami today. I want to wrap this episode here by asking you this question. When you go back and look at Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury and the game that we are diving into, which is the first real trademark breakthrough win in Timberwolves history, the win over Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls at Target Center in 1997. One of the things I thought of when I watched that game play out and the energy and just the bond between Marbury and Garnett, mm-hmm, and Flip and the fans, like everything was just this symbiotic relationship that had the Wolves on a trajectory to potentially take over the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they popped up a few years later and they went to the Western Conference Finals and Sam Cassell to Charles Sprewell. But really, like, we've spent most of the last 20 to 25 years trying to recapture what we felt in the late 90s,
yes,
right? With a couple little pop-ups here and there. Do you think Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell realize or even want the responsibility that they have when it comes to Wolves fans and putting the organization back on that level?
Oh boy, I sure don't have that.
On paper, that's the responsibility that they have been given.
It's a different era, different time. People are different now. I don't know that I can say I've seen that. And keep in mind too, as Tom said, and this is the most important thing, and this can be bad at times, but it also can be good, Phil. KG was wired differently. Cat's not wired like that. KG was going to, in his mind, win, and he was going to do exactly what that took. And Flip then went and got him that complimentary piece, and in 1996, that was a point guard who was fantastic. Do I think that you can do it with a point guard and center that you currently have? I have no clue. Really, it was so much fun to go back and watch that game, though, to realize where this team was at one time. And unless you fully comprehend it, I honestly think it right now, it's damn near impossible to understand that. Like, if I just tell you that,
mm-hmm,
so if you just tuned in and you're like, this is fun, man. So the Wolves were like, I can tell you that and articulate it to you, but understanding that is tough.
92-89, Timberwolves with the lead, and now this crowd is starting to believe that they'll win. Now, the Bulls don't want any fouls here. They just like to play some real good defense. Marbury drives baseline, bounces it to Hammonds, to Kevin Garnett on top from 20. Garnett.
Yes, sir. Beautifully done. Garnett with a 15-footer. Yeah.
Declan, you were growing up, I'm assuming you kind of grew up in the KG era.
So, true story, this is actually the first sporting game I ever attended.
Really, dude?
I was 5 years old.
That's amazing.
And I briefly remember the significance of it just because my dad remembered telling me that it was the first time we're actually going to beat Michael Jordan. So
he called it before the game.
I remember driving in the 91 Volvo that we had to the game. And yeah, it was one of my earliest memories. My uncle had season tickets. So yeah, it was the first sporting event actually I ever attended. And yeah, KG and Marbury, man, I had a Marbury jersey growing up. I think it was a hand-me-down for my brother technically, but you're right that they were the most polarizing athletes in town at the time. And they were, for the late 90s kids, they're athletes.
I mean, this was, the 1997 Twins were a disaster. The North Stars were gone.
Yeah.
And the Vikings were just sort
and
of...
Moss was not here yet. Yeah. You know? That's exactly right.
This was it, man. This was it.
This was fun.
And that's a wrap on another episode.
That was a fun game to watch,
Minnesota
man.
Sports Rewind. You can binge all of our episodes anywhere you find podcasts.